Welcome to Enclave On Air. I'm your host today, Jessica Hergert. Enclave On Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by Daiichi Sankyo, we had the pleasure of speaking with Virginia Kaklamani, MD, a professor of medicine in the Division of Hematology and Oncology at UT Health San Antonio, and the leader of the breast cancer program at UT Health San Antonio MD Anderson Cancer Center, to discuss the importance of strategic treatment sequencing in HER2-positive breast cancer. In our exclusive interview, Kaklamani discussed current treatment sequencing approaches in HER2-positive breast cancer and the benefits and challenges of moving effective treatments into earlier lines of therapy. In terms of your own treatment approach, could you walk us through the options that you consider in the neoadjuvant, adjuvant, and metastatic settings for patients with HER2-positive breast cancer?
So the first decision that we make when patients come in with early-stage HER2-positive breast cancer is whether we should give them neoadjuvant therapy or whether we should proceed with surgery. And that really depends on how large their tumor is, obviously their age as well, and comorbidities that they may have. So assuming their tumor is over 2 centimeters, in most cases I would give them neoadjuvant chemotherapy, because what's extremely important to me is how well that treatment is going to work. This will determine what therapy to give patients in the adjuvant setting. If the neoadjuvant chemotherapy produces a pathologic complete response, then I am likely to continue antibody therapy in the adjuvant setting as well. But if it does not produce a pathologic complete response, then the patient may get a benefit from T-DM1, which has been shown to help improve outcomes in that setting. Another thing that plays a role is whether we're going to give extended adjuvant therapy with neratinib. This drug has shown a benefit, again, in that extended adjuvant setting. Important for me to try to prevent disease from becoming metastatic. So I will offer more treatment to my patients compared to less treatment, just so that I can achieve that. Now, if a patient metastasizes, then we have too many therapies. We have pertuzumab that we use typically in the first-line setting. We have T-DM1 that we typically use in the second-line setting. And then we have medications such as tucatinib, such as trastuzumab deruxtecan or T-DXd. Those will be used probably in the third or so line setting. Many really factors come to play besides the clinical trial data that we have available. Now, the good news for our patients is that we have a lot of treatments available for them if they do have HER2-positive disease.
Do you feel that moving therapies into earlier lines of treatment is a lucrative strategy for this patient population that should really be pursued?
Absolutely. I think that it's extremely important that our good drugs be used early on. First of all, as I mentioned before, my goal is to try to prevent metastatic disease from happening. So the most effective drugs are going to help me do that. That's why we now are designing clinical trials with medications such as trastuzumab deruxtecan and tucatinib in the adjuvant setting, so that we can prevent the disease from becoming metastatic. Once the disease has already become metastatic, then the question is, do we want to give our best drugs early on, or do we want to wait? And the way I approach it is, first of all, the clinical trials that we have, the most active agents are used in the first or second line setting already. And secondly, why wait? Why not give your most effective drug early on? Because that's when it has a good chance of producing a better progression-free survival, which to me is the goal. I want my patients to feel as best as they can for as long as they can, and those better drugs give me that option.
Now, is there a concern that moving therapies earlier in treatment will limit options that are available in later line settings?
If our goal is to try to prevent the disease from becoming metastatic in the first place, that's where I focus on. And if that means that I have fewer options for the patient's metastatic setting, then, you know, that's a risk I'm willing to take, because I'd rather be able to prevent all patients from developing metastatic disease in the first place. To me, that's not a big concern. I think that most of these patients are going to see most of these drugs, but again, if some of these patients don't develop metastatic disease, that's a huge goal.
Are there any other challenges with utilizing therapies earlier, or do you really think it's an open and shut case of what should be considered standard in HER2-positive breast cancer?
I think we need to be doing clinical trials. That's the only way that we're going to know what drug works and what doesn't. There's, you know, some preclinical data suggesting that some drugs in general may work in resistant disease better than in non-resistant disease, and so these drugs might be better served to patients in the metastatic setting and in later lines when there is resistant disease. But in most cases, especially in the HER2-positive setting, the more effective drugs will work earlier on in either the adjuvant setting or in the first-line metastatic setting. I think the clinical trials will give us the answers that we need to be able to show that, you know, this specific drug is effective in an earlier line. The other thing that is extremely important to keep in mind is what the side effect profile of the drug is. You know, in the metastatic setting, we know that these women are more likely to die of metastatic disease than anything else. But in the adjuvant setting, we're hoping that our patients are not going to die of breast cancer. So the likelihood of us wanting to give a drug that can cause a lot of toxicities is much lower in the adjuvant setting than it would be in the metastatic setting. So all of these things need to be taken into account before we make decisions as what drug to move forward.
Now, what therapeutic options have the potential to move into earlier lines of treatment, and are there any data to support those shifts?
Not yet. There are trials that are now being designed, and those are looking at, again, our higher risk population is the patients that receive neoadjuvant chemotherapy, but regardless of that neoadjuvant chemotherapy, still had residual disease at the time of surgery. So those are the patients based on data from the CAPRI trial that right now we treat with T-DM1, but we may be able to get a better benefit if we treat them with one of those newer agents, such as the CAPNIP, such as T-DXd. So these trials are now kind of being designed to look at this setting to see whether it's worth moving these drugs forward. But without clinical trials, I would never advocate for any of these drugs being used in the adjuvant setting.
Now, looking to the neoadjuvant setting, and specifically neoadjuvant chemotherapy, is there a concern that giving chemotherapy before surgery will limit the patient's eligibility or decrease their fitness for surgery?
So this is tricky because this is where we have to take into account the patient, and we have to be very careful because obviously the surgery is curative, and we need to make sure that these patients are fit enough to get to the point where they can have surgery. So this is kind of more the art of medicine than anything else. Having a patient in front of you is worth more than 1,000 words. And you have to take into account comorbidities, the right chemotherapy. In most cases, we're going to give them a 3-4 drug combination, probably for 6 or so cycles. Most of the patients that we treat that way are able to go through surgery and have a good surgical outcome.
How do patients typically fare on adjuvant therapy?
Pretty much all of these patients will receive some sort of adjuvant therapy. It may just be monoclonal antibody therapy, such as trastuzumab and or pertuzumab. It may be T-DM1, depending on how they fared on the neoadjuvant therapy. But they will receive some sort of adjuvant therapy because that's been shown to be beneficial. As far as how they fare, they do pretty well. They don't seem to have any issues once they've completed their neoadjuvant treatment, and they're able to complete their adjuvant therapy pretty well.
Now, in terms of the metastatic setting, do you anticipate that the frontline standard of care will really change for patients in the coming months to years?
Right now, there is an established sequence based on clinical trial data, but the landscape is changing quite a bit because we have all of these drugs now moving into the adjuvant setting. So, for example, pertuzumab, which is considered probably our number one therapy in the metastatic setting, is now being used in the neoadjuvant setting. And so some of these patients may end up not receiving it in the first-line setting because they may have received it in the neoadjuvant setting. So I think as we move drugs forward, we're moving all drugs forward. So we are potentially moving our first and second-line metastatic drugs to the neoadjuvant adjuvant setting. That means that we're moving our third and fourth line metastatic drugs to the first and second line metastatic treatment. So obviously clinical trials are going to help us with that. The initial trials that were done in the metastatic setting assumed that patients were not receiving these drugs in the adjuvant setting. There's always a gap in knowledge because our clinical trials started 3, 4, 5 years before we even had any results. And by then, the standard of care may have changed. And that's really always a limitation of any data that we have.
Now, of course, you highlighted that this paradigm is changing and expanding. Could novel therapies further change the frontline space or provide additional rationale to move therapies earlier in treatment?
Oh, absolutely. I think that that's exactly what's going to happen, the same way it happened with pertuzumab and T-DM1. We have vaccines that are not coming out, again, in clinical trials in HER2-positive disease. We have bispecific antibodies that people are testing with results that are relevant. At least in the beginning phases of the trials, pretty interesting. So I think the drugs that are now being used in the next 10 or so years, I would expect them to have a place in the adjuvant setting and hopefully, in most cases, eradicate this micrometastatic disease and help cure our patients with HER2-positive disease.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive on Air, sponsored by Daiichi Sankyo. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field and recaps for our State of the Science summits and institutional perspectives in cancer webinars. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and at OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive on Air.